1-0 is drilled out to deep left field. Back goes Barbara at the high wall. That ball is gone! Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got just enough to take it over the new wall in left field.
0-2 pitch. Drive deep to the gap, long run. Haniger gone. 0-2 pitch, went with it and drives it over the 380 mark. And Detroit back in front, 3-1. 3-2 from Chafin. JP's at second. The pitch struck him out. Game over. Tigers win it.
Home sweet dome. Toronto Blue Jays have clinched home field advantage. Woo! Confirmed, thanks to the Detroit Tigers, who I've always loved and respected, and they're basically my number two favorite team in the league, securing the win over the Seattle Mariners last night. Toronto Blue Jays winning in a tsunami rainstorm. They're playing the wild card series at the Rogers Center on Friday. Get ready, Toronto.
What's the overriding emotion for you?
I'm elated.
Just excited, elated.
I woke up this morning with a little pep in my step. And I'm excited. Playoff baseball.
That might be because you're flush with cash after literally everything you mentioned on the show hit yesterday.
That helps.
So congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I'm just relieved, though. I'm so relieved we don't have to have the game 162 conversation. I was dreading that.
Honestly, just mail it in. Don't even play.
Now we can kind of just...
Let me see you say Kikuchi back-to-back days.
We could do anything the next 2 days.
Call up someone I've never heard of.
All the options in the world. It's two games that may or may not be played under normal conditions given the rain schedule and what might happen. So it's good that these games are going to be meaningless because, starts might be pushed back. You might have two games in one day. Who knows exactly what's going to happen? Thankfully, they didn't have to, finish the last couple innings because it was a rain shortened victory for the Blue Jays on Monday night. But yeah, we really didn't want to see matters be complicated. And now that Detroit did Blue Jays fans a solid by taking one from Seattle, nothing to worry about over the next 2 days.
First of all, that looked like the most miserable sporting event of all time to play in. That's why you get a dome. It's not that hard. Yeah. Build a dome. I felt for the guys. It's just pissing rain. You can't even, the pitchers, there's no dry spot on your uniform to dry your hands off.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a slip and slide out there. Blue Jays, unfazed. They're there to put the work in, get their win. I will say when there was the rain delay in the eighth inning at 9:45 p.m. and they put the tarp on the field and they don't call the game.
And the Jays are up 5-1.
They
took a sweet time, too.
I thought, don't they have respect for the fan morning show who wakes up at 4 a.m.? I can't sit here and watch a rain delay for 45 minutes. Good thing there's some other sports on to distract. But Blue Jays, they're playing at home. First time hosting a wild card game, I think, since 2016. First home playoff game since the 3-0 loss to Cleveland in Game 5 of the ALCS in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And this all happens, as Shai Davidi pointed out, who we're going to have on the show, 1 year to the day of that fateful game where the Blue Jays win and they sit there in the stands and they watch the Boston Red Sox ruin their chances at making the postseason. I remember sitting there. I think I was at a local bar. Went to that game, which was awesome. Walked down the street to a local establishment and everybody was watching this baseball game that no one would have watched unless it was for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell short. And all season long, they talked about not wanting that moment. They want to control their destiny. They don't want to have seven things needing to happen and this team beating this team and by this much. And it's done. The Blue Jays will be hosting the wild card, still up in the air, who they can play.
Yeah, a little bit surprising, right? Because we've been zeroed in on Seattle. They lose one game. Tampa's hasn't put one in the win column since, and we're still not able to bury them. But, you mentioned moments like all these, everything's sort of happening. I think we brought up the word anticlimactic. I guess yet last year, the disappointment, it's almost like the Blue Jays deserve some moments, and maybe those moments are to come. Of course, they
don't
had that,
waste them now.
Exactly. They had that party on Friday night, and that was deserving, of course. But even clinching home field. It's like, okay, we didn't actually finish this game, and we got to wait for to see what happens at Detroit, Seattle. I mean, the Blue Jays haven't had been able to like own something yet. And of course, they're going to get that opportunity at Rogers Center this weekend, whether it is the Mariners or Rays. They have it all in their control, and hopefully they're able to rise to that occasion.
Seattle's magic number to clinch the second wild card over Tampa Bay is 2. There's mm-hmm. 2 games remaining.
Seattle has 3 games remaining.
You're right. They have this so stupid doubleheader.
A combination of Seattle wins, Tampa losses. Does Tampa have Texas? Can you check that for me? Seattle has 3 left versus the Detroit Tigers. Clearly, the Tigers aren't rolling over despite them heading into a long
Rays off
season.
Rays have the Red Sox.
The Red Sox, sorry.
2 games left the Red Sox. They lost last night to the Red Sox, 4-3.
Yankees have the Rangers. And we're still on Aaron Judge 62 watch,
There's
by the way.
So much going down in these next 3 games, or 2 games. Rays and Red Sox, there's a lot riding on those 2 teams. Seattle and Tigers, 3 games. They got the doubleheader today, 6:10 p.m. our time and 9:40 p.m. our time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we don't have to wait up for that one. And then tomorrow at 4 p.m. our time.
So Seattle can handle their business today. It's going to take a sweep on a doubleheader. But the Rays, despite struggling, 3-7 in their last 10, losers of 3 straight, they do have the Red Sox. So they can potentially get things straightened out and sort of flip the narrative here, because we've been talking, again, a lot about Seattle. But the Rays, I don't know if they're going to, like, push it, right? Do you think the Rays want to come to Toronto?
I see, this is where
like,
I
they're
sit,
not gonna
and I wonder.
They're not going to make Manoa-like decisions mm-hmm. in Game 162 to come to Toronto when the Yankees side of the bracket mm-hmm. and a first-round matchup versus the Cleveland Guardians, who we mentioned, have not dealt with what the AL East has dealt with this season. I don't feel like the incentive is there for the Rays to really, really push it.
I wonder if Tampa Bay radio and Seattle radio are having the conversations that we've been, who would you rather play? You know, now that you don't have home field, would you rather go to Toronto and play the Toronto Blue Jays? And I think, well, who's feeling confident about coming to play this team? They're red hot. The vibes are immaculate. Mm-hmm. They have the top 2/3 starting rotation that you could feel really confident. Barrios had a great showing last night. The question mark that we've had around him, I feel like we're getting to a point of confidence. You have Manoa, who's absolutely electric, and I have zero doubt in my mind or my heart that this guy's going to come out game one and absolutely be on another level.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Gausman apparently yesterday said his finger's fine. Everything's good. Everybody relax. So with all that said, you look at that pitching to start things out. You got Jordan Romano, who is the closer of the year. You have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting bombs that nobody has hit in that field. Just $5 cashing as well, so thanks, Vladdy.
There's going to be a lot of that today.
Oh, yeah. You have Whit Merrifield, who is on an absolute another world
yeah.
of performance. This guy has been the storyline for the last week. He's earning his postseason spot. I think that a friendly roster competition has clearly worked in his favor. This guy wants to play in the postseason. He wants, as he said, I think it was Sunday. Yeah, Sunday's final game. Like, we'll see. If we want to be here Friday. We want to play at home, and I'll see you there.
Yep.
Look at this Blue Jays team. Who on Seattle radio and Tampa Bay Rays radio is thinking, let's go to Toronto? Home field advantage, to me, gives Toronto such a massive boost. Like, the city is hungry for playoffs.
Yeah.
In every sport. And you have the opportunity since 2016 to host a home game. We saw you were around 2016. I don't know if you went to any of those games. Another level of sports here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sounds like I would not want to come to Toronto and play this team.
Well, I think the priorities might change with these two teams, or at least with Seattle, now that it's settled. Now that the Blue Jays have home field advantage, Seattle came to the ballpark last night thinking, hey, we got a chance here still. Let's win this game. Let's take advantage of our opportunity. Let's push this as far as we can, because we want to play at home and we don't want to go to Toronto. And Tampa doesn't have the opportunity, didn't have the opportunity. They were already out of it in terms of hosting home playoff games. So they probably have put it into second gear as well. So now that both teams don't have that chance, they're either going to Cleveland or going to Toronto. I don't know if they're going to be, you know, sending out their top pitchers or making sure their lineup is flush with, you know, who needs to be in the lineup. Like, they don't necessarily have to force the issue here now that they're pretty much settled in their position. And I guess it could even go the opposite route because you may prefer Cleveland over Toronto. And what I like about the home field advantage is, yeah, this city's been waiting for this for a while, mm-hmm. 6 years. It's been a little bit since we've been in this position. Not like it was before when it was literally decades. You're just dying to get back into the playoffs. It's a bit more normal now that the Jays are going to be competitive. But the players want it. The players are dying to see it themselves. We've seen those quotes where it's like, oh, what did Batista and Encarnacion tell us before, you know, they left town? That you don't know what it actually is to play baseball in Toronto until the playoff date rolls around. So these players want to experience it just as much as the fans want to experience it. And, like, you know, that's not a science. Does that immediately portend good things for you? I'm not really sure. But I feel like this is what they wanted. This is the position they want to be in. This is the position to have success in. And we're going to see it. And the players, more importantly, are going to see it.
Guess who secured Friday tickets? Yours truly.
What? 5 minutes ago, you didn't have tickets. What happened?
I have tickets. I mean, I wanted to see, a friend of mine wants me to see if I can get tickets for her, but okay. I already have my own, so.
Okay.
I'll be there.
You ready to go?
I'm so fired up.
Do you know where
up.
You're sitting? What's,
don't worry about it.
Can you?
Right behind home plate. I'm just
kidding. No, you're not. Like, what's?
I'm in the 100s.
You can't give me details?
I'm in the 100s. I think it's like.
You're ready to go.
Third base.
So what,
to
what
watch
is?
Matt Chapman put on a clinic.
Matt Chapman.
Yeah, third base.
Oh, third base. Sorry.
It's going to be, I honestly cannot wait. Like, it's Tuesday. I'm already, get me there. Fired up. And
this is like breaking news all of a sudden. What's going to be your routine? Is it going to be like bar first, bar after?
Well, you
it's
know
Friday
what? We
night.
Have,
there's no, the one thing that sucks about the timing.
That's the thing.
True.
And I don't think it's going to be a Friday night game because if you look at, we talked about this yesterday, who's getting primetime viewing? Is it the Seattle/Rays Jays?
I mean, our only saving grace, as we talked about, is that if it's Seattle, then they might push it back. You might get a better time. But that might be a late night thing.
Oh, play later than 7 p.m.? I got bedtime here.
It could be.
You know what? Friday's shaking out to be a great day. You got the beep test.
Or the game is at like 11 a.m. and we don't have to do that.
Oh, we'll be doing, you do a post wild card
okay.
beep test. You're doing yeah. the beep test.
Yes, I am doing the beep test.
Anyway, so it's all shaping up to be a wonderful weekend ahead. Alek Manoah coming off pitcher of the month for September. Everything's turning up real good right now. And so, yeah, the next 2 days, I wonder your strategy. You don't want to take your foot off the gas pedal, though. I have played for teams that you clinch and you think, okay, well, let's just chill a bit. And that can be to a limit. You want to have good habits going in. You want to feel confident. You don't want to get blown out by the Baltimore Orioles the next 2 days. But I think you can put some players on a nice scheduled rest day. I don't want to see George Springer.
No, that's the one guaranteed. Let's take a chill.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're not going to see Alek Manoah game 162. Thank goodness.
No.
You're going to see Mitch White tonight. That's great. I don't think he'll be on the playoff roster.
And then it might be Yusei to close the show.
There's rumors it could be Yusei Kikuchi on Wednesday.
Which would be terrific. I mean, I want to keep
Bring
with Merrifield
it
hot. I want to keep
yes.
him in the lineup. I'd probably give Bo and Vladdy a day off each. But yeah, you got all the opportunity in the world to spread some rest across the lineup, give people a day off if they want it, if they want to keep going, allow them to keep going. It could be a couple ugly games with the pitchers we have lined up, but there are auditions for maybe the postseason roster. Maybe
That's
one of
true.
These guys gets on there and whoever pitches the best over the next 2 days squeezes in there in a break glass in case of emergency situation.
A couple players also looking to get back from injury and get in the postseason roster with 2 days remaining. That's a narrative to follow. And when they make this playoff roster, who's on the outside looking in? We got Shai mm-hmm. Davidi joining us today. Nick Kiprios. Kipper joining us at 7:30.
Your guy's back?
Yeah, and Bill Ripken. So we got a lot of baseball hypotheticals. There is the potential that the weather doesn't hold up, and I don't know how the next 2 days go. So that's a
also potential of these games not being played, right? Like if it's just inclement
weather,
what
happens? You just forfeit the last two games.
I mean,
of the season?
Again, you can't take what you see on Twitter for gospel. But I thought there was like a possibility, like you don't have to do it. Like if it's not necessary, you just don't
win.
Do it.
Someone has to win.
Yeah, of course. Someone. We're trailing
and
pick
Toronto,
a side
one to Baltimore.
Because you need someone to win everything.
Obviously, these last two games could. What if they meant something?
But they don't. Because they don't mean anything, I think you can
skip that. The MLB's like, never mind.
I think you can.
Wow. Well, that's shy. Anyway, I can't feel more positive about where we're at as a Blue Jays team. Just lined it up. I don't know if you want to play this team. I don't think so. With everything in the last 2 weeks looking the way it is.
Last thing you want to do, though, is like hang around in Baltimore longer than you need to.
Well, they can't. They got to come home and host this game. That's not fair if they make them play Thursday.
I know. Just like, let's just get through this. If we don't need to play it, don't play it. But let's hopefully the weather is fine and they can just get these games through. The read-through games, get back home, prepare for Friday, which should be glorious.
Yeah. The only thing I want to add is, you're right, about the Aaron Judge watch. I'm getting a little anxious that he's not going
to
get it.
Yeah, we're going to have to ask Bill Ripken about this later.
Like, TikTok here, buddy.
So he's been super, when he was in Toronto, super cool, right? Like, look, completely unfazed.
He didn't
care. This wasn't a thing, right? Didn't even matter that he wasn't getting pitched to, or that the Blue Jays were at least being ultra conservative with their approach to him. Hits one anyway. He hits the 61st. It's a great series for him based on that alone. Gets to go home, has the chance, doesn't happen. Now there's only a couple games left against Texas.
So they got a doubleheader today.
He's going to have what? 9-10 at bats today?
And then tomorrow.
And if it doesn't happen today.
Oh my God.
Like, that's what I want to ask Ripken about is like, is he starting to show a little bit of that pressure? Because again, he didn't show it at all. Wasn't written on his face, wasn't in his body language. Is he pressed today? Will Texas pitch to him today?
What do you think if we're putting.
How disappointing will it be on that team going into the postseason if he doesn't get it? Like, I get this is like a completely individual thing, but don't you think that would be deflating?
Yes. Because we felt like it was a lockety lock, as a J.D. Bunkus would put it, for the last 2 weeks that this was going to happen. And time has started to dissipate. And now he has 3 games. And I looked, John Gray tonight, TBD tonight, and then Glenn Otto.
Yeah, don't have a scouting report on Glenn Otto. But
Glenn Otto,
I feel like
4.72 ERA.
In all three matchups, Judge will be in an advantageous spot if they choose to pitch to him. Like, it's not in his control anymore.
Do the Rangers have anything to play for? I don't think so.
No.
So just Glenn Otto, if you're pitching on Wednesday afternoon, just be a part of history.
Give the guy a chance. But you were staunch and like you didn't want to be that person. Now you're saying,
well, now I'm worried for the guy. I want him to hit it. Pujols last night beats Babe Ruth's record. Like, I want to be a part of this story.
That's why Tampa's mailing it in right now. They see that Judge and the Yankees are not going to be able to cross the finish line. They're going to be in shambles by the time their postseason begins. That's the side of the bracket you want to be on. Sorry to Jays fans, but Houston right now, pretty strong. Stronger than the Yankees, and certainly stronger than the Yankees if they're like licking their wounds actively after Aaron Judge
Unless
fails to get 62.
They get into the postseason, Aaron Judge is just pissed right off. And he just starts crushing.
Maybe he needs to get pissed
homers.
Off. Actually, why am I nitpicking him? He scored. He's hit 61 home
He'll
runs
be fine.
This year.
I think
his strategy and approach is okay.
All right. So Texan 590-590. How are you feeling? The Blue Jays clinch home field. You're gonna be there. What's your strategy to being able to view these? How do you feel about this team right now? Feeling like they've got the momentum, the peaking at the right time. Whit Merrifield, MVP of the last 2 weeks. You got your starting rotation lined up, ready to go. Are you in the same confidence bracket that I'm in? Mark in the bridge said moon jail for Judge if he doesn't get 62. He's trying. He's trying his best. Okay, so last night we had lots of cover. Blue Jays win in the dramatic rainstorm. Toronto Maple Leafs as well in action. 5-1 victory over the Montreal Canadiens. They move their preseason record to 4-1. Canadiens are 0-4. Tough spot for them to be in. I think that we have seen from last night about a 90%, 95% roster that we might see opening night.
That was pretty much the roster. And I don't know if we put this together yesterday, but like we saw the roster and we're like,
during the wake and rake, we're like, oh yeah, this is kind of good
makes,
roster.
This kind of makes sense for like the one time we get to see the roster before they sort of move forward. And of course, there were some like variables there, like we don't know about Nick Robertson, and I think Pontus Holmberg was in the lineup. I'm not sure we're going to see him, but largely, this is what the lineup could look like, and it looked pretty good. I mean, they're still entering the season without John Tavares, with a disadvantaged second line, and maybe all the pieces aren't in place. I think David Kampf is the one guy who's like, oh, he's obviously going to be on the opening night lineup, and he's not in this game. So it's going to be a little bit different, but that's largely what we're going to see. It wasn't full-on experimentation from Sheldon Keefe. I didn't watch the third period, so excuse me if Marner got some shifts on defense in the third there. But that's largely what we're going to see, and largely it's been really impressive. And I think leading that, we're not going to get too excited about the preseason, but leading the positivity or the charge or run on positivity is the fact that Matt Murray looks really, really good. And he looks like a massive human being. Did he suddenly grow? Did he grow from his time from Pittsburgh?
He's a giant. Remember when we were at media day?
He
walked in, and I thought his head was going to hit the ceiling.
Tall, but like he looks, I mean, he's not a skinny guy, yeah, but he's like lean.
He's lean.
But when he throws those shoulder pads on, I mean, he looks like a monster.
He looks like a transformer.
And if he can, he looks like a transformer, certainly when he's got those blinder goggles. Have you seen that blinders goggles thing that they're using? Curtis Sanford?
Oh, like in practice?
In practice, they're like wearing
I've shot on the goalies like with that on before.
Oh, this is not a...
No, that's not new.
Everyone's like...
I always volunteered for goalie practice.
Yeah.
Because it helps you as a player too.
Yeah.
I love when they put the blinders on.
I didn't know. I've never heard of the blinders thing.
What?
Yeah.
Give it the time,
well, everyone's,
buddy.
Everyone's making fun of the Leafs, which is like a common occurrence on hockey Twitter. But everyone's making fun of them because we're seeing this for the first time, or at least I'm seeing it for the first time, and many people are as well, that they're using these blinders. But, I mean, anything that helps you...
Hey, whatever. It's working.
Focus.
Matt Murray looks great.
Good thing. But he looks great. He looks massive. He looks imposing. I think that's almost a sign of confidence, too. If you look big, I mean, you literally cower in fear, right? So that the opposite of cowering in fear would be strong and presenting a square and large target for shooters to hit. All great things, of course, with the goaltending. He went 60 minutes without giving up a goal in the preseason. He did allow one in the third period.
He's got 100 minutes in the Leafs uniform so far. 2 wins, 45 saves on 46 shots, 1 assist.
There's not much you can ask
Zero
for.
Zero goals at even strength.
That's great. So,
and he had a baller save on Juraj Slafkovský, who everybody thinks is a bust. It's crazy.
Yeah, people are.
That's a whole storyline.
People are out for Juraj already.
Poor Juraj can't
even have
1 minute to get his feet under him.
Juraj might be going back to Europe, which is not a bad thing. Wow. Just for the year. You can't. Owen Power. Time's up.
You're up.
For the time being. Anyway, because of last night and what we saw and what we can project without Tavares, I almost think we should like put together the Leafs lineup.
I love it.
Because, again, I think Sheldon Keefe sort of laid the groundwork for that. But I think the biggest question is Nick Robertson going to land on this team? And after what we've seen in the preseason, what we continue to see from him, I don't know how you could not start him in Tavares' spot. That doesn't mean he's going to play center on the second line. It means he's going to take up one of those top six forward positions just because he's played so well. Like, yeah, you can put Dennis Malgin on there if you want, but Dennis Malgin didn't get the run last night with Nylander and Kerfoot. Mm-hmm. This was an audition, and Nick Robertson finished the game with 3 assists and played really well in 11 minutes.
Nick Robertson, to me, has been, as I think I put it out 2 weeks ago when we started preseason, the biggest storyline for me to follow. I want to see this guy succeed. It's been a few years of expectations not being met. He is a guy that can and should make an impact on an NHL roster. And he has done just what he needed to do so far in this preseason. 4 games, 3 goals, 4 assists, 12 shots on goal. That's great. That's points. He's got tied for first for the most points in NHL preseason with Matt Duchene and Timo Meyers.
Yep.
That's pretty good company.
Yeah.
But besides the points, he just looks like a different Nick Robertson. He looks like he's playing with aggressiveness. He looks more solid. He's getting in the tough spots,
which is
something he didn't do before.
Yeah.
He wasn't the guy that was going in the corner being gritty. Like, I thought that was a weakness of his. He didn't look strong. He didn't look like confident to go in there and do the dirty work. He looks like he's earning this spot. His shot is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Matthews said, he was asked about it post-game yesterday, if he's ever given pointers to Nick Robertson. He said, quote, I can't really teach him anything because he shoots it harder than anyone on the team. That's Auston Matthews saying that.
Yeah.
And he has no reason to pump this guy's tires. He could say, yeah, he's got a great shot. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he's being a little modest because he probably shoots it harder than anyone on the
team. Whatever. That's
a great compliment from Auston Matthews. Second, that's fantastic. And that's a nice little skill to have on a second line where you have a really creative player in William Nylander who can score goals as well. And right now, centering it, a really defensively reliable player in Alex Kerfoot that can allow you to explore your offensive game in full. Like, he doesn't have to worry about handling defensive duties if he's weaponized on the second line in tandem with a defensively responsible center in Alexander Kerfoot. And that's why I think he's going to start the season on the second line, and he's going to be on this team at least until John Tavares comes back. That's at least how I see it shaking down. It may not be that. It might be Dennis Malgin, ultra-conservative decision, maybe a little bit punchless that second line. It might be punchless to start anyway. But I feel like the best move for the Leafs here is to play Robertson, and Robertson has undoubtedly earned that opportunity through his performance so far in the preseason.
I say you give him that opportunity because Malgin, when? Exactly. If not now, then you're never going to give him the opportunity. This has aligned. I know it's unfortunate that Tavares is injured and Engvall has the foot thing, who's probably on the quicker return. But that opened up a hole, and he has fought for that opportunity.
He's got to continue earning it.
That's it.
He can't, the regular
like,
season.
Okay, great. You had a great regular season. People can say that regular season's regular season. You're not playing against the best of each team. But he looked good enough to earn that spot, and you put him in there until he doesn't deserve it. And I don't know, maybe if he gets that confidence boost to start on the second line of the NHL regular season with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He hasn't had that level of confidence from the coaching staff.
He has the opportunity to prove that he belongs if he starts on the second line. If not, if he doesn't block, like if he can't have similar success to the preseason, he's not going to lead the league in points to start the year. That's not what the expectation should be. But if he can prove that he can be the seventh top six forward on this team, then that's great. And when John Tavares comes back, you're going to have to figure out where he belongs after that. Can he play a bottom six role after that? You're going to have to see, because Engvall is going to soak up a checking line spot, and John Tavares is going to push the chess pieces around the board a little bit more as well. But for now, Robertson deserves that opportunity. So you want to go through...
Yes.
The top six.
There's no chance in my mind that's not Bunting, Matthews, Marner, so just lock that in.
Of course. And we're locking in together, Robertson, Kerfoot, Nylander to start the season with Tavares out.
I can't picture a different top six than that.
Now, the only other, the bottom six
is a bit of a collection of names.
It is.
And I just want to mention, that seems like a good problem to have, but all offseason, it was like the Leafs don't have enough players. They have some players now that have to make decisions. I wouldn't say that they're the strongest bottom six in the league, but I think we were like, who is going to play in the bottom six? Well, there's like 12 names at this point.
Yeah, if you count Tavares and Engvall, it's 14 minimum NHL forwards.
Where did all these players come from?
If you're counting Robertson, right?
Yes.
So they have the top six. That will change when Tavares, like, something's going to have to give here.
And he's still, three weeks away?
But Kerfoot could be the guy that drops down.
Sure. I view Kerfoot as a hybrid plug-in glue guy.
Interestingly enough, I'm more confident with the second line with Kerfoot centering Robertson than Robertson with Tavares. I don't know. I don't know what that says. Does that say more about Tavares? Kerfoot?
What would you do with Tavares?
I just don't know. Your gut was on fire yesterday.
Okay. I didn't eat seven loony dogs. Is that what you meant?
No. Just dominating with all your picks. Will Nylander, Tavares, Robertson work?
I don't know, because Nylander, Tavares was question marks.
Because Nylander, Tavares doesn't work.
And we went to media day, and the conversation was like, well, we don't need them to really mix. We need them to play well.
Yes.
Remember? It was like, well, don't you need them to mix well?
There was
like,
a lot of admission,
you need some chemistry.
Admission that it doesn't work, but we've got to figure out a way for this all to work.
Well, maybe you don't need to figure it out. Maybe it's been figured out.
We couldn't do anything about it because we have no money. Anyway, I'm more confident in, because I think Kerfoot can help these two coexist. in terms of like, I can just be the defense. You guys go do your thing. And Nylander's backhand goal, beautiful.
Nylander's looked at one of the most stars.
He looks so good, and he's always looks good with Kerfoot. So I'm excited about the prospects of this second line to start the season, assuming that it will be that.
Okay, so bottom six.
Then you have your guaranteed checking line. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't have to be that way. We've seen a lot of projections have David Kampf on the fourth line. I don't really understand why that would be, because he's too valuable as a checking line center. Like, so, you want to throw him against top competition. You can't be playing with fourth line forwards in order to do that.
So my question is, I know last season they had the third line as checking shut down, and they were elite at that. Like, you put them against any top line in the NHL, which they were put against, and they were probably one of the most consistent defensive shutdown lines of the year. But you're missing some pieces. So do you go with that same lineup construction where third line is lockdown line?
I think they're arguably better defensively now than they were last year on the third line, at least in terms of personnel. Mm-hmm. So they lose Mikheyev, they bring in Yaron Croak and Aston Reese. I think Aston Reese is one of the best defense. If you look just purely by analytics, and he's had sheltered minutes in his career, no doubt, but he has been one of the jewels in terms of analytical bottom six forwards for a long time. So just assume that he's going to be a strong defensive player. David Kampf should be able to help him be that defensive player. And Kalle Järnkrok is like Mr. Versatility and a defensively reliable player as well. So they lose Mikheyev, who's very good defensively as well, brings a different dynamic in terms of his defensive skill set, in that he's a fast player who can create problems with his speed. But I don't think they lose anything here. And of course, Engvall is likely to slot in, giving you even more strength with your third line if he replaces Zach Aston-Reese in the future. So I think you just keep that dynamic where you want to shut down the opposition with a group of bottom six players that are individually very defensively strong, but together could be like juggernaut strong in terms of what they can do at a shutdown perspective.
Okay, so you're liking Aston-Reese, Centerbike, Kampf, and Järnkrok.
And when Engvall comes back, Aston-Reese likely gets demoted.
I think I've seen similar, but Malgin getting that third line opportunity. But you don't think that his defensive shutdown abilities are as strong?
I don't know. You can. I love Nylander playing on the shutdown line, personally.
You put him on the third line?
If they did in the playoffs last year. They did it at times last year during the regular season. I just think that it gives you, I don't think it takes much away from his game.
I think he doesn't like it, and I think it takes some.
Do you think he loves playing with John Tavares?
I think that he would care about being on the third line.
I don't know if he would. They get so many minutes, and he is individually, he can carry the load offensively himself.
That's true.
I think it's something worth continuing to go to throughout the year, especially if the incompatibility issue with Tavares and Nylander persists. So I'm not against having like a scorer on that line, but
then what's your identity?
Despite what Malgin's done this season, I'm not rushing to put him in my lineup. I'm more intrigued by Robertson than Malgin.
Yeah, 100%. I've been on the Robertson train. Malgin.
But it almost seems like if Malgin's going to be in the lineup, he's got to be on the third line.
That's why I was a little bit surprised that you had him on the fourth.
Okay, so if Malgin replaces Aston-Reese and then you put Aston-Reese where you think he's going to be when you're at full health, is it an Aston-Reese, Obey, Kubel, Adam Gaudette fourth line?
I like Steves. I think Steves has been all right. I've heard some Steves love as well.
I may be a little recency bias, but I saw him make a couple plays last night that I was like, this guy doesn't have it.
And you know what? Preseason, if you make a couple mistakes, that's what the coach, like, you're earning a spot.
Alex Steves can't be making mistakes.
You cannot be.
Like, he had like a partial break, and he made a decision to pass the puck backwards, and it immediately led to like a partial break the other way.
You're right.
Like, you got to be that, and that's just one example. But like, that was an odd play. I was just like, okay, what's going on with Alex Steves here after that? But again,
I know it's a valid point.
I've seen 1% of his preseason and training camp. So
you don't have the opportunity to have question marks in preseason.
And Pontus Holmberg, too. Holmberg is someone who's got a lot of run this preseason.
Okay,
and has impressed. So he could be the fourth line guy temporarily as well.
No Abruzzese.
Never been impressed by Abruzzese.
Where Wayne Simmonds has no role on this team.
He's probably the 14th forward. He might be the 15th forward. I'd rather have Kyle Clifford in the lineup.
I was going to say,
Simmonds.
Where's Kyle Clifford in your rankings?
It could be Clifford, Obey Kubel, Gaudette on opening night.
And then there's no Dennis Malgin.
I'm not rushing to put Dennis Malgin in.
See, look at this as a kind of a
good problem
to have.
To me, it seems like it's Malgin or Robertson, and it's not even a question for me right now.
Couldn't agree more. And you know what? You have Simmonds and Clifford for games where you're going to need that type of physical boost, but I don't think that they have the speed and the quality of play to crack this lineup on a regular basis.
No, they seem like situational guys at this point.
That's tough. And also, if you're...
But Sheldon Keefe did say to start the playoffs last year that his best fourth line includes Kyle Clifford. That was only 6 months ago.
But they've added a couple of new faces.
And by the end of the postseason, he didn't have Kyle Clifford in the lineup.
Exactly.
Albeit and he got suspended early, didn't he? Did he take himself out of the series?
Something like that. Yeah. It was a bad hit. You have youth, and you have people that are trying to earn their spot, and they're competitive.
And you have identity. Like, it's pretty clear what Kyle Dubas wants to see from his team up and down. It's not face punchy.
Face punchy.
I mean, we could see Curtis Douglas at some point, and that would be a different dynamic.
Didn't he get sent down yesterday?
I'm not sure if he did officially, but I don't expect him to start the season. But, like, if you're not getting what you want from Clifford and Simmonds and you need that, you decide you need some of that, he seems like a decent option. He's a much better skater than I think we probably gave him credit for as a big guy. Or he's definitely been working on that. Anyway, you know what this team wants to be from an identity perspective. They want to just have skilled two-way bottom six forwards that bring speed and give you defensively reliable minutes. And when you look at the bottom six now, that's all you really see. And that might be fine. Colorado just won a Stanley Cup by just having uniform.
Exactly.
They forechecked really well. But Andrew Cogliano was like, is there much left in his career? All of a sudden, he's like, he has the skill set that fits Colorado perfectly, and they just throw waves at attack and forecheck at you, and it works. You don't need to be towering, lumbering, physical, unless you choose to be that. And a team like the St. Louis Blues chooses to be that in a lot of ways, and it works for them because it is actually built into the identity. The Leafs don't have, you can't just have one guy doing something. It just doesn't work. It doesn't translate because it's not within your DNA. The DNA is pretty clear for the Leafs, and they're riding with it.
And I think if you're put in this roster in a line that's consistent, you know your identity, you play in your identity. But you're right. If you have missing puzzle pieces that don't fit, like one, punch people in the face and shut down and skill and finesse all mixed in the bottom six. I think you're right. Team identity is so important, especially because I think we've questioned that at times. Like, what is your role? What is this team's direction? Have that assigned early on in the season, and players lean into that and they know their spot.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis Douglas was sent down to the Marlies yesterday.
Now, that's the one thing with Robertson, to tie a bow on it. He can go down. He can go down without waivers and all that. And that's maybe the one thing that hurts him at this point, because you might have to sacrifice someone to have Robertson on your opening night lineup because someone might not slip through waivers.
That would be difficult. I really want to see him get this opportunity, which is earned.
That seeing Robertson not start the season when he deserves
like a failure
to
again.
Because you're trying to preserve a body. I don't think that's the way to go about it. The Leafs lose people through waivers, partly because there's a lot of attention on them.
People love to grab the Leafs waivers.
And if it happens again, it happens again. Like, you can't lose sweat over it. You have to put your best foot forward. And so far, through the preseason, Nick Robertson has shown that he belongs on this opening night roster.
Do you have any questions about the D lineup now?
No.
Seems I think like it's pretty much set.
Gio just, it's on this guy to move to the right side. That's really
it.
It
was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday.
How old is he now? Is he 40?
He is 39 years
39.
Old.
39. Almost there. Trust on the 39-year-old who took less money to play for this team. To move to the right side to
that's
make all the pieces work.
He'll do what
that's
he needs to get
that's
this
why
team.
That's why he's
that's
the
why
new
he signed
Spezza.
There.
He's the new Spezza.
You're right. That's why he signed here. He wants to win. He wants to be a part of a team. He wants to help the the team over
and maybe
the
they said, hey, why don't you hang out with your buddy Jason Spezza for the next 10 years in our front office after?
Oh, 100%.
We'll give you more than $800,000 a year.
There'll be another assistant GM role that pops out of nowhere that's scripted to someone else. How many assistant GMs did the Leafs have?
Limitless.
Like, actually, though, what do you think? Over five? Over under set at 5.5?
I think it's probably in the 6-7 range. I don't know if they're exactly assistant GMs, but probably, like right in that group. Probably 6-7.
Damn. Well, they'll open up a spot for Gio.
And Spets is not there yet either. But like, they're going to create...
I picture him in that role.
This is part of the competitive advantage. Then there's more than 6 or 7 if you put Spets in there. There's a lot of people in there.
But that's great. They want to be a part of the organization and help these youngins.
How else are you going to flex your financial might?
That's true. So it looks like Riley, Brody, Muzzin, Hall, Sandin, Gio. Sandin, got to get back in the fold.
Yeah, and part of this is due to injuries. You're crossing your fingers about Muzzin. We've discussed Justin Hall a lot through the summer months, but I think you need him now, at least in the short term, with the injuries that they've piled up here. But I feel like I think the defense is as good as it's been for a while, is fairly set up, isn't as deep as it was supposed to be, but that's just because of injuries. And you're going to reevaluate over the course of the season. But right now, it looks pretty obvious what they're going
on. Okay, here's something to chew on.
You're not going to wait till...
No, it's not an actual chew. It's just a small chew. It's a nibble. How about that?
Okay.
Sandin has been skating on the right side with Muzzin.
Mm.
He is embracing the challenge. Quote, I feel comfortable on the right. I need to prove myself. I need to show them I had a good summer. Keith said, it's something we want to look at for sure.
You should definitely be exploring it. Because you need someone to transition to the right side. And if Gio can't do it, then you don't want to be lost. But, you know, I feel like you could have had a contract if you were willing to do that and they wanted you to do that and there was an opportunity on the right side. I guess it required Timothy Liljegren to get hurt for that right side to open. But if Sandin was there and proved he can play on the right side, wouldn't that sort of prompt the Justin Hall trade that we've been talking about for a while?
Yes.
Probably. But you never know.
One last thing on Rasmus Sandin. He went from 178 pounds to 194. Bulking up.
Still a small guy, though.
Hey, you know what?
That's physical.
A good amount of pounds.
He was physical at 170, and he's going to be physical at 190.
I feel like I did the same thing during the pandemic. Okay. Great rundown of Leafs. We're going to have Kipper, our guy, back on at 7:30 today.
He can shoot down everything we were talking about.
Hey, maybe. He'll be raring to go. He's back in the fold. Haven't been on the radio for a while.
I feel like he'll have some Nick Robertson takes.
I hope he does. That's later, 7:30. We have Shai Davidi at 7 and Bill Ripken at 8. And then a spicy Wake and Rake where it's been red hot for y'all. But next is the A-List. It's the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Naylor. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's time for the A-List.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
People sell a lot of weird things on the internet. But somebody, multiple people actually, are selling bags of air from the Rogers Center, from the night that Aaron Judge hit 61 home runs.
Good God.
Ziploc bags full of air from the Rogers Center are being sold on eBay for $267 at this point, recent update. Quote, this is the eBay ad. Offering Ziploc bag of air from Aaron Judge's 61st home run game, Blue Jays, New York Yankees. It's just simply a sealed sandwich bag with a piece of green painter's tape bearing the words Judge home run 61. $267.94 plus $27.47 for shipping. Because obviously you have to pack this in an appropriate box where it's airtight. Like, you can't have it pop. I don't really understand how you would ship that. Maybe someone listening works for FedEx. I don't understand how you ship a bag of air. I guess it's got to go in a box. It's actually insane.
I don't understand, like, I don't even know if physics is the right word, but, like, let's say you shipped it to Colorado altitude. What happens to the air?
That's what I was thinking.
What happens to the baggie?
Like, it's going...
Does it pop?
Sometimes when you ship stuff, it has to go in an airplane. It's, unless you're doing FedEx ground, it's going to go in an airplane. And there's no way this bag, the Ziploc bag of air, is going to manage to stay afloat and...
How about the world we live in, eh? Like, worried about climate change, protecting the environment, but FedEx is running flights so that people can have bags of air from inside a sports venue shipped across the country. We're worried about authenticating the balls with Aaron Judge, right? There's like a little like design on it to make sure that, you know, this is the Aaron Judge home run ball. You can't make it up and throw it on eBay and say, this is the Aaron Judge ball. Now we got to worry about authenticating air.
You think this is Frankie Lasagna or Mulligan?
A desperate ploy from Lasagna.
And listen to this. Somebody bought one. One was purchased on eBay. Somebody bought this bag of air. Multiple bags of air are being sold.
Mm-hmm. One seller, or is this like a bunch of people are doing this?
Well, I clicked on the ad and it's since been removed. I think eBay is probably like, this, you can't sell this stuff.
Yeah.
But one was purchased.
See, like, it's always worth a try. Like, you don't even have to, this could be a no-risk ploy from someone. Just literally open up a baggie. What does that cost? 5 cents?
Less than that.
Throw some air in it, which is basically just moving your arms and sealing it up.
You don't have to move it.
And go to eBay and say, yeah, this is from this. Like, you didn't have to be at the ballpark.
No way to verify it. Unless you take
not.
A photo of the bag. Like, it, like photo of the bag. And it is in the eBay ad. Like, there's a photo of the bag in front of the ballpark. But that could be any day. How do you
not
have Aaron Judge in the back?
Outside the ballpark?
In the ballpark. That's okay. The ad photo. But that could be any day. Like, it's not like you're zooming in on the Aaron Judge home run. It's just this guy's hand.
Well, credit to the person who did get someone to buy it. Because that's a free, whatever, what did you say, 200 and something?
$267 plus $27 in shipping.
It's a free $67 for someone who...
Honestly, like, good like for them.
That could maybe get you in the building on Friday night.
Ooh.
No?
I think tickets are going to be wild.
You're the one who bought it.
Tickets are going to be crazy. Anyway, so if you're listening, maybe you grab a Ziploc and you head down to the Rogers Center and you say, first game hosted at the Rogers Center since 2016, and maybe there's a win there, and you sell that on eBay.
Alek Manoah's first postseason start. Here's a bag of air.
He breathed this
air.
That
might get $35.
I think it would get more than $35. If the going rate is...
The sliding scale is Judge 61 home runs to one postseason start for Manoah. Maybe I'm undervaluing it a bit.
Okay, let's sneak one other one here, baseball related. I would hate to feel like Elton John doesn't like me. You know, I feel like he's a guy that likes everybody, right?
Really?
I don't know.
I don't get that vibe from Elton John.
He seems like a lovely gentleman.
He seems like the guy that you don't act up around to me.
Okay, well, he was doing a concert in Nashville, and he stopped the concert to say the following.
And something that makes me very happy tonight, the Braves swept the Mets.
Something that makes me very happy tonight, the Braves swept the Mets. Elton John just, the Mets catching strays from Elton John at his concert, sold out.
In Nashville?
Well, in Nashville.
What's the connection there?
It just happened to be that day.
Is Elton John's a Brave?
So apparently he is. So I looked into it because it seemed extremely random. He's a huge Braves fan. He has a home in Atlanta since early 90s.
Okay, that makes sense.
During the Bobby Cox era. And he keeps up with the team. And he was very happy. And so much so that he stopped his $1 million final tour, which God knows if it's his final tour or not. We gave free tickets to that, so shout out to us.
Did.
And
keyword tiny dancer.
Ripped off them. And I think people just like didn't expect him to be a big baseball fan because he's not from the States. And
he's a Brit.
Apparently he is.
I wonder how Elton John celebrated the Braves World Series last year. How do you think Elton John celebrates a sporting accomplishment?
I think it's probably pretty extravagant.
Probably. I think that's a good bet.
If you've seen his life and his concerts. Yeah. Anyway,
Have you been to an Elton John show?
I wish. New York led Atlanta by 10.5 games on June 1st. So, massive collapse. And Elton John loves it. So, I would say it'd be tough to have Elton John chirping your... Like, imagine Elton John was like, I don't like that fan morning show. I'd be devastated.
Yeah, I don't think you'd take that well.
No.
Although, good pub.
That's true. People would start listening. They'd download, subscribe, and like. Speaking of, send in your wake and rake picks. It is not a heavy schedule tonight, so probably from the Blue Jays game, which is an important one. Text that in 590-590. We'll take your wake and rake anchors all morning until the 8 o'clock block. Justin was the weakest link yesterday, looking to turn that around.
Perfectly executed happiness hedge. We got to wax on about the Blue Jays claiming home field advantage because the Seattle Mariners lost. I did leave room for one very unfavorable outcome, which was Seattle winning by one. Mm-mm. Like, so it's not exactly the perfect hedge, but we'll take it. It's okay.
Toronto Blue Jays clinch home field advantage. Friday will be the start of something special here in Toronto. We're going to talk to Shai Davidi, who was in last Friday's fun celebration in the clubhouse. Maybe he can divulge a little bit of behind the scenes to us. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ayler, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.